Oh, yeah.
We did, I was, did the North Slope ERA project, and we interviewed a lot of the, I worked with Paul Michelle Gruber and some of the other people there. We did some interviewing of some of the ex-military people that worked on some of the Nike missile sites out there and the anti-aircraft gun sites and so forth, so that kind of stuff. So,
all right, I'm talking to Jonathan Lucas on April 4th, 1996. So tell me about when did you start working?
I started working out at NReactor March 19th, 1981.
And what was your job?
Hired in as fuel operator in the fuel section of the reactor, out of the reactor, with the intent of going into the reactor operator training program.
So what is what does a fuels operator do?
Basic duties are it'll be the fuel section, which is preparation or receiving of green fuel from the 300 area, preparation of process tube of the process tube fuel bundles that are stored in that section, and those are loaded with the appropriate fuel arrangements, and then let's see what else also. The basin itself, as far as the handling, the routine procedures of handling of the spent fuel as it comes off the discharge side of the reactor, where it's put in off the trampoline into the little underwater carts, and then that gets sent out to the basin, and then repackaging of the fuel in canisters, and the operation of the various cranes out there to lifting and putting these the spent fuel. Gas Asperate's been there a year in the basin. It was transferred into casks, these big casks, and those were
like these up, over there. We got there.
I'd have to look at what you. I'd have to go take a look at what you got over there. But there were big railroad cars, and those were loaded into the railroad cars, and then the cars.
You're not talking about the canisters. You're talking about
well, we did. Those were we. Dealt with those, and then those were loaded into casks, into these big casks, shielded casks. They were lifted with a 60-ton crane, and then those were loaded into railroad cars that had water inside those. And then those railroad cars were sent over the Cape.
Because Purex was closed.
Right. We were just shipping everything over to Cape, where it sat over there.
Yeah. All right, so anything to do with handling fuels.
Right.
As a fuel operator. Mm-hmm. And that what union was that?
That would be the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers. Yeah. And that was the union I was for that job.
So how many, on a shift, how many fuel operators were you have typically?
Let me think here.
Or I guess it would depend on...
Oh,
you're not usually doing all those activities at once, right?
No,
usually,
it just depends on what was going on. Like I said, we were just doing fuel handling things out in the basin, probably repackaging when the reactor was up and running. We were just doing some of that stuff, and also preparation of new loads of fuel for the reactor. And those were loaded on the walls where that charge-discharge machine was at. And that kind of stuff. So there's probably, I'm guessing here, maybe 10 guys in our crew on our side of the deal. I worked for the supervisor I had at the time, this guy named Bob Dorsey. That was the first, was my supervisor on A shift.
Uh-huh.
And that was we worked a rotating shift, graveyard days.
All three shifts,
mm-hmm.
around the clock.
Yeah. We just did that. We had our long change off.
So it was a good job?
Yeah, enjoyed it. It was an interesting experience. Graveyard was kind of tough.
Yeah.
A lot of times coming home from the first night of graveyard, because you wouldn't get much sleep, you'd think. you know, you just come home, you're pretty tired, you've been up for a while, and you think, I gotta do something different. So just because of the shift work, but long chain was nice and had a good crew of people working for it. Enjoyed it.
Huh. So did you work graveyard for a while, and then you
worked a week of each, like a week of days, and a week of swing shift, and then a week of graveyard, and then right after graveyard, you'd have like a Friday through a Wednesday off, and you'd come back on to swing shift, if they call it.
For 1 week, and then the next week,
you'd be off Friday morning, yeah. You'd be done, and you'd be off like about 4 days, you'd have off.
Wow, that sounds...
That was kind of nice.
But to change shifts every week?
Yeah, you'd work a shift
like
a week.
Your body could never really
recover. Yeah, the swing shift, you get home like at 1 in the morning, and then you stay up for a little while and...
Wind down.
Yeah, just kind of wind down for a little bit and go to bed and get back up, around 10 or so. Go and get ready for your next shift. When you'd be picked up by the bus, like around 3:30, take about a half an hour to get out there. Our shift started at four in the afternoon, and went till midnight.
What were the different? Were some of the jobs? I don't know, more interesting or intense? Step me through kind of the different.
Just in the fuels portion.
Yeah,
and the fuels portion.
Yeah, the fuels. Sure, start with the fuels.
Okay, I see fuels. Some of them are more interesting than others. Let me think here. It's kind of fun running the cranes. I enjoyed running the cranes. I had that big 60-ton crane. You had to pick these casks up, so you can be,
out of the basin.
Yeah, picking these casks up out of the basin. And so you could be really goofing, around. You had to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that was pretty challenging running that 60-ton. Loading the fuel tubes for the charge discharge machine. There was just a casing that didn't go in there, and you had to set up so many tubes and ready for charge discharge and spacers. Or we call them perfs, and then fuel elements.
And you're doing that. I mean, the reactor's up and running, and
you can do all that. You're doing this beforehand. Is kind of stuff, just prep work and
delivery or loading the
right. And we're inspecting, and as we call, we're inspecting fuel that came in. And there's the example of that fuel, just like those
inspecting it.
Yeah, just looking at it. Make
so
sure
just a visual inspection.
Yeah, just looking at things that we get receiving. I remember we had to wear the little white cotton gloves just because you didn't want your fingerprints on there. It could cause, I think the oils in your hands could cause some damage to the, it was a zircaloid casing, as I remember, as I recall, on the outside of that fuel element.
Otherwise, there's no hazard of fuel.
No, it was just, we had to wear a typical dosimetry. There was probably, I don't recall, I'd have to find out what the kind of, if you had a fuel element next to your desk for how much you get, it wouldn't be that much to speak of. It's just, And so we worked with that, and we loaded those into the, like I said, into these tubes, and they were
different
tubes, and they were designated for a certain process tube.
Because you had different lengths.
Right. Mm-hmm. 1,003 process tubes in there. So, and as far as that goes, we did that part. Now the grade 23s, which were the reactor operators, they ran the charge to discharge machine.
So they're the guys we were seeing in the video.
Right. Those were like grade 23s.
Yeah.
Or in training, you'd be like grade 18s, grade 21s, grade 23s. Depends on how far along you're training. Yeah. Grade 23 was a certified reactor operator. Uh-huh.
So when you have a planned outage to discharge, what would you be doing then?
if I was a fuels operator, like I said, just
running the machine.
Well, no, they would be doing that if you were just a fuels operator. The reactor operators, they ran the charge discharge machine that would pull the fuel, the appropriate ones off the bundle, and get it through the correct hole where they were doing that part. But as far as our end of it, we would be, if we're in a charge discharge mode, we would be the fuel section would be on the, in the basin, yeah. And we'd be getting the fuel, the spent fuel that came off the back of the reactor and hit the trampoline, and then it would go into these underwater railroad cars.
Uh-huh.
And then we'd have to operate the cart system, get everything in there. So just basically getting the, keeping the, spent fuel going out of that, out of the discharge chute, and getting it into the basin where it needs to go. So, uh-huh. So we were just kind of, picking up the, if you want to say the empties or the hot fuel.
Yeah,
and I did that part of it, and processed it. Yeah.
So how long did you do that?
I did that for, I was a fuels operator for about, 6 months, as I recall, something like that. I believe it was about 6 months. And, look, I don't know what's here. It was about 6 months. I was a reactor operator training. I was there for about in that portion for about 6 months. Actually, it was about 4 months or so when I got here. Yeah, about 4 months I was there doing that portion, and then in July of 81, I got into the reactor operator training program.
Uh-huh.
And that you're grade 18, and you start going to classes and doing hands-on training, or just learning the ropes. And it's, you're in a sense kind of mentored by certified operators too, and plus going to classes, lots of classes.
So, what types of activities do reactor operators do?
Okay, well, let's just say if you're a certified operator, one of the things that we did, like I said, as far as the control room duties, if we were up and running, we would, you'd take turns at different consoles in there, rotating around. Like the new console was, you were controlling the rods, pulling the rods in the reactor and watching the flux monitors. In that part. So basically, you were just kind of in the driver's seat in that part of it, just running that. And then you were. Then there was the AA console, where the that's where your primary coolant pumps were controlled from, and you watched your pressurizer water level, where the pressurized that kept the, as far as the you could see what the water level was in the primary coolant loop. Steam generators, observing the levels in the steam generators. You're kind of in control of that portion of the reactor. Also, injection water, if you needed to add any water to the reactor. There was a constant kind of a feed and bleed to the primary coolant loop. And the bleed would go out to one of the cribs out there. And let's see, then BN console, that's where it's kind of the secondary system. You're keeping an eye on the secondary system, steam pressure. Also, the dump condensers, operation of those, that's where the excess steam that wasn't sent over to, if we were sending steam over to the Hanford generating facility. Any excess steam that they would not take would be dumped and condensed in the dump condensers. And let's see, also, so dump condensers, also your circulating raw water pumps, provided that was another closed loop that went through the dump condensers. And that was just raw water pumps off the river, that portion. portion, and then there was also the rupture monitoring system that was behind you. You'd watch for fuel ruptures. Let's see what else.
So how many guys are in the control room?
Let's see. Oh, you had one on the new console, one on the AA, one on the BN console. You had one on, be like the communications, and then you had also the BN console operator would take care of any heating and ventilation needs, and that was down toward the, you're familiar with being in the simulator, that was in the back there. Like here was where the new console was, and here's where the AA was, and the BN console was back along here, and here's heating and vent here, and then there was a communication console here, and here's where the reactor operator, or the, would be the control room supervisor sat. And so you have, well, yeah, like I said, one, two, three, four, about five guys were in the control room. And then you'd have, and then another person would be out doing building control. And so he'd have a whole shift, you know, 8 hours to go out. He'd have to go make the rounds. There was a certain list of things he had to go check. See what was it, go in the rod rooms, check various gauges for, make sure things were okay in there, and as far as the rod room, see what else. 117 building was the, where the, would be the,
air monitoring.
Well, what that was for was your, the, zone one, where your primary piping was, your various air would go, finally end up out 117 building out stack, but it goes through various filters. So you'd have to, one of your duties is to go in there and make sure all the filters were working okay as far as you check delta pressures across the filters, make sure things were okay there. Let's see here. To check both rod rooms, left and right rod rooms, you'd be checking. So, team milling, let's see, you'd also thought about the route for the control.
Oh, we're all right.
Time, let's see.
Oh, okay. And she in turn will give you the.
Think what else around the building control we had to do. Oh, okay. Yeah, I had to do the also your heating and ventilation for the buildings. For the 105 building, check the various fans and so forth. Make sure everything's working okay there for your air plenums. Let's see what else. I could probably think it's one.
Yeah, but
I can't think of anything else. So you'd be doing that. There'd be one operator doing that. And, so you'd have the people in the control room, person doing patrol, and maybe somebody doing some training, things like that. So it was basically, I say, while the reactor was running.
Yeah.
And so it was basically, the reactor would be on, I'm going to call it cruise control, it'd just be going along. You'd be running about, equilibrium would be about 4,000 megawatts you'd be running. And just doing those various duties. Keeping an eye on the enunciators, the enunciator panels, and if there's any problem comes up, you take care of it. Or, two, maybe if there was any minor maintenance going on that didn't have to do with reactor operation, or as far as directly tied to it, something that can be done while you were still up and running, we would go assist maintenance because you had to go turn off the on and off the breaker. That was our jurisdictional duty, things like that.
So there were undoubtedly any unusual occurrences when you're working the control room?
Yeah, there was things that they would have. I remember, well, let's see, I wasn't in the control room at the time, but I really had an air loss incident one time. I think that was kind of
okay. Exciting. Great. Thank you.
And that would be instrument air loss, and there was, and that was controlled from the auxiliary side or the power operator side. And stuff. But other than that, I can't think of anything offhand.
Just little minor things
that you got to just do and things like that.
Gage starts reading.
Check it out. And you do your thing, but yeah, just keeping an eye on your gauge. Yeah. It's like going down the highway, looking at keep an eye on your.
So no scrams in your.
Let's see. It's near scrams. I remember one near one where we. I think something to do with one of the turbines, it was one of the steam turbines. I think it sped up, so it cooled things down, and so we had a little spike in reactivity. So if you have cooler water, it causes more neutrons to be thermalized, and so you get more reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we had that, just some various laws, but on the whole, it was one year ago.
Was it hard to get certified?
It was long training process, a lot of classes. Had a, like I said, a lot of classes. We had a, when I was telling you about the other day, we had to get training at the trigger reactor, a submerged pool reactor that's over the 300 area. I don't know if it was still operating or not. But we had to go through a training program on that and start it up and shut it down about 10 times. And then that was one of the things. And we had and then tests along the way. And then our final test was we had an 8-hour written exam. And then we had oral interview with some of the main guys that, knew their stuff about they'd ask questions on various things, to see whether you have been paying attention to your training and see how you're going to do.
Then how often do you have to get recertified?
Once a year, you had to go to recertification, just a refresher kind of a deal. Go through class. So it was a continual schooling process and stuff.
Were you there when reactor? I mean, when Chernobyl?
86, yeah. Yeah, and I was, like I said, I was there from 81 through 89. Yeah, I remember when Chernobyl was, and then there were all the talk about, end reactors like Chernobyl and stuff. And so I think that was kind of start of some of the demise and some of the, that kind of reactor operation.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff, and then after that they started doing a lot of safety upgrades.
Yeah, I noticed here you went to procedure writer.
Yeah, in 86.
So a lot of new procedures.
Yeah, they had a procedures group already, and that was just the maintenance of the revision procedures and so forth that we utilize for operations. And I mainly got into procedures just because I wanted to get off shift work. It was a day job. And I already knew everybody there. And I could just go out and talk to them and stuff and try to, get procedures approved and stuff. And two worked on procedures for various safety upgrades they did. Hydrogen monitoring system they put and I wrote procedures for that. Let's see. Also, a new hydraulic system for the valving off the dump condensers. Did that new hydraulics they put in there. We had to did procedures on that. Various all other aspects of the facility there, as far as operations go. So I did that. So I did that from 86 through 89. And then they shut the reactor down in 87. And then got a job in July of 89 with Westinghouse in Barnwell, because of just things were kind of in a decline out there, and things, it just wasn't looking good for trying to stick around.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff, so that helped me out there on that time.
Well, the image of control room operators is that, you know, maybe boring.
Can't be. Because, you know, it's not much happening, right?
You're just waiting for something.
Right. You're waiting for something to happen, and you're, you know, you hope something doesn't happen.
But is it a hard, it's a hard job in that respect?
It can get you, well, it has its exciting moments, and then has boring moments too, just because you're, nothing's going on. You're just kind of making sure everything's just going along okay, and watching your enunciators, watching your gauges, and just everybody working together, keeping it going along, and producing the plutonium. So it has its dull moments, but it has its, you know.
When something does start going along.
Yeah, then you got to think. Then you got to start thinking, kind of, you know, because you can. It's sometimes easy to kind of, you know, to relax because nothing's happened for a while and stuff like that. But you just deal with it.
So I hear a lot about the camaraderie and mm-hmm. a great place to work.
Yeah.
That's the way it was in the 80s.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. We had a good team. Like I said, we were on A-team, Eric called A-team, A-ship. And we had a good crew of people. Enjoyed it. It was a good experience. Like I said, it was a good running reactor. It's too bad it shut down, but that's just how things were and things happened. And like I said, it was a good experience. Had its some of the unfun jobs were, what was it? Oh, when you had to recycle balls from the ball hoppers. There was 108 ball hoppers on the top of that. Mm-hmm. Where the function of what those mm-hmm. are. Okay. And if you need to recycle hoppers, as the balls drop down into the channel, you got to recycle them for a while from the bottom back up to the top. And so you got to, that's kind of a process. And if you're up on top, you're in whites with plastics on and all sealed up and stuff. And it's hot up there on top of the reactor where the ball hoppers are, kind of dark and stuff. And you got these big hoses, like these gasoline hoses that the tanker trucks fill up mm-hmm. their tanks, the tanks at the gas station.
Yeah. Right?
And you attach those down onto the filler spout for these ball hoppers. And get cycled up, you know, okay, we're going on ball hopper number whatever, there's 108 of them, and sometimes those balls would kind of bridge up in there, and you have to be shaking that hose, trying to get those balls down the hose, and so it'd give you kind of a workout. That was one of the funner jobs, was recycling balls. So,
well, they sometimes kind of went into the reactor unplanned?
The balls? Let's see here. I'm trying to think when we. Sometimes we'd have to do a normal recycling of them. And then, kind of my faux pas was I was a green reactor operator, was we were, I don't know, maybe one of the other guys told me of this, we were getting ready for a startup, okay, and we had to do various checks of the systems and stuff. And I was in the control room there, and the reactor's down. We just had to, we were doing various things trying to get started up. And so we were doing some system checks on the intermediate range flux monitors. So I hadn't really done it actually much or worked with anybody much on it, and so I kind of worked with one of the guys a little bit on it, and I knew the process, but what you do is you put in checks. There was like if there was three monitors, and if they indicated a high flux level of neutrons at for a certain amount of time, it was for 5 minutes, and you input that into the system, you got to do a 2 out of 3 trip on it. And if it saw that for 5 minutes, it'll it'll trip all the ball hoppers. Well, anyway, we had put in the system trips, but for some reason, like I said, I didn't think it was going to actually trip it. And it left it on there, and we had that those two trips in there got left on for 5 minutes, so it dumped all the ball ball hoppers. This is right. This is before startup. So So that was kind of my operating faux pas. I did. that one was a. I got a lot of razzing about that one. So,
because then, how long would it take to?
Oh, it took. Well, it did. And I told him, well, it did put the reactor into a safer condition than it was. And then, two, it took. Oh, probably about 4 days, because we had to recycle all the balls back up to the hoppers again, load them back up. But we did. That did. One good thing about it, there was some problems. There was a paddle conveyor down at the bottom of where the reactor, where there's, this is where the balls all drop down into the ballroom, what's called the ballroom there. Anyway, underneath there's a paddle wheel type of a conveyor deal. Anyway, there were some problems with that hadn't been really taken care of. So that got repaired, needed repairs done with it. That had been kind of a deal that happened before. That, so it took care of, it got those repairs done, and then we were able to get those. So there was one good, it wasn't a, yeah, but it did delay the startup for about 3 or 4 days.
Well, with startup, is that a, like the most exciting time for a control room operator?
It's hectic because you're just trying to get everything. You got to go through all, make sure all the systems are ready, make sure all your backup systems are ready, and just everybody's, you know, just like preparing for a trip or something.
Yeah.
Just going through all these checklists, trying to, and testing out safety systems and making sure that they're all going to work properly, so when you're up and running, they'll function properly.
And pretty much they're always successful when you were doing it.
Yeah.
What about shutdown? Is that the same? Is that pretty easy?
Shutdown is busy because you're helping maintenance. Well, you're doing charge discharge, or you're helping maintenance out. So you're going around doing various valving, you know, turning, setting if you have to go into zone one, where the primary piping was to align valves up in certain arrangements for maintenance, or doing the same thing for in preparation for startup. So that was one of the jobs, was to do that. That was in our jurisdiction, since we had opening and closing breakers, opening closing valves, things like that.
So to shut down, you just start putting in the control rods? Is that what you would do?
Oh, to shut down? It would just be a controlled shutdown, and you'd just take it down, get them into a certain, you'd take it down to a certain sequence of, you know, bring it down, and then you'd scram them the rest of the way. I recall that.
Yeah. How about security? Can you tell me about security?
Oh, security. Well,
because in the 80s now, it should be.
Well, when I first got out there in 81, it was, they didn't have all the double fencing out there, as you probably see.
Right.
I saw out there. And then they started putting that up, I'm guessing 82, 83, something like that. And so we did have, I remember, had a volleyball court out there in the main court area where there's a where the main guard shack is now. But security was there when I first got out there. There wasn't the security out there. It was just, you know, they had security, but it wasn't the real intense security with the razor wire and the cameras and all that kind of stuff out there.
How about the guys in the 105 and the corner?
The little cubicles there. Yeah, they, you know, when they security started increasing out there due to various things that happened, in the world going on at the time and stuff. And they started beefing up security out there, putting, you know, the razor wire and the cameras and so forth, and plus having the metal cubicles in the hallways where the guards were, you know, and be in there with their automatic weapons and stuff. So you just, it was just kind of like, you just
get used to it.
It was just used to it. It was just kind of, you know, they're there and you said hi to them and stuff. And
you could see the guys in there?
Yeah, you knew. Yeah, you could see them in there through that little deal. And then we had a guard there at the front door and going into the control room. And you show them the badge getting in and out of there and stuff. But it was just, they were just part of the deal.
Yeah. They have dogs?
Yeah, they had with dogs come go around occasionally, that.
And then the guard tower.
The guard towers and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, the security increased out there a lot. And the metal detectors and all that kind of stuff. Huh. And then they put up the Jersey barriers, those concrete barriers, when they had some terrorist bombings going on and all like that, after that bombing of that Marine base in Lebanon, I remember that they started putting those type of deals in there so a truck just couldn't, with bombs, explosives, that it couldn't just go do a run straight up there. He'd have to negotiate through these Jersey barriers.
Any other stories we should get down?
I can't think of anything else. And then, too, when we do decon of the reactor.
I don't know much about that.
It was just, they run a stuff called Turco through there, and you'd have to get, it was just like a cleaner. Because periodically the various little traps and little spots in the pipes would get, high levels of contamination. It would just build up there, and then you'd have to flush all that out. So they do, in a sense, flushing of the primary coolant piping, and then that would all end up out in the golf ball. It was called the golf ball
for
handling. And
so how often would you decon? About once a year?
Might have been a little longer than that. I don't call out the particular schedule. And two, it would be indicated to just by, I know the various health physics people out there, they do their various monitoring when we were down of the piping out there and locating where hotspots were and things like that. But they're probably on some sort of a schedule also. Other thing too.
And fuel and charge discharge, that was pretty regular every every month or so?
No, it was like, I kind of forgot what the my 3 months, something like that. I forgot exactly. It was fairly periodic. It was fairly periodic.
It take a couple of weeks.
And within that time period,
maintenance or whatever.
And you'd be on the charge discharge crew. Either you're running the charge discharge machine, or you're on the front of the reactor, like we were looking at that film in there. That was on the C elevator there. You're in your plastics.
Hi, guy.
Hey. And popping off the process tube.
Hi, Henry. How you doing?
Very good.
You're looking good.
You too. And taking off the process tube or the caps and the tubes get in there, and we'd have competitions between the shifts who could do the most process tubes. That type of deal. So
reactor balls.
Or you'd be on the rear. If you were doing the charge discharge, it was kind of nice because in those suits you're pretty hot and water running on you, kind of cool you down and stuff. Right. Or if you're on the rear there, which you're when you're waiting for the obviously you couldn't be in there when you're discharging, or you get a major dose of radiation, so you'd be outside there, you'd be waiting for them to do that, so you'd be go out and lie on the floor, out concrete floor out there to stay cool.
But someone's got to go in and take the cap off for the discharge, right?
Right. You do that. Yeah, because there's no problem there.
You just go away.
You go in there and you take the caps off the various tubes that are going to be discharged, and you put what's called tip-offs on.
Is the water flowing out like it was on the front face?
But they put it on low flow. They put the reactor on low flow, and so it won't come out. You've also got several spacers before you get to the actual fuel. So that wasn't a problem.
So you take the caps off, and then people leave, and then they push through the process, the new tube.
Right, yeah, you take the caps off, put tip-offs on,
tip-offs.
and then you go ahead and get the elevator positioned up, you know, away from there, so it just discharges the chute, and then you discharge those tubes, and the guys will be on the front, you know, pushing through the discharge machine. And
come back,
inject
the caps on.
Yeah, come back and put the caps on, and then go to the next setup. You know, they had a list of tubes that you were supposed to do.
Huh. Any union issues while you were?
Union issues?
No strikes?
Nothing in particular. I remember I wasn't real active for Sandy. I went maybe one union meeting at the time. That was the only time I've been in a union. So nothing in particular I can think of offhand. I enjoyed my time there. It was an interesting experience. Learned a lot of new stuff.
Yeah.
Things like that. So it was a good opportunity, and like I said, some ways you miss being out there. It's kind of, you know, it's just it was an interesting place to work.
Yeah, and the whole shutdown thing. That's when I got here.
Yeah,
I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Must have been real emotional out there, waiting every day to find out.
Oh yeah, what's going on?
Shut down or not?
Yeah.
Well, thanks, John. That was great.
You're welcome.